Hey there, welcome to MedTech Africa, the podcast where we showcase digital health and health technology innovations from across Africa. I'm yours truly, Sam Oti. In today's episode, we have Dr. Fatou Zondi as our guest. She is the clinical lead and chief operating officer at UNU Health, based all the way in South Africa. We'll be talking about the important role that technology and business can play in providing access to quality primary healthcare and how UNU Health is using their tech platform to do exactly that. Thanks for joining us and do enjoy the conversation. Hello, Dr. Zondi. Welcome to MedTech Africa. How are you doing today and where on earth are you at the moment?
Good morning, Dr. Samuel. It is great to be with you. Please excuse my voice that is a little bit croaky as I recover from flu. I am joining you all the way from Johannesburg in South Africa.
Oh, wow. It must be winter. You know, I lived in Joburg many, many years ago. And when I was there, it snowed.
Really? That's surprising. Look, everyone always laughs at our winters in South Africa in general, specifically when we're talking to people from the global north who experience what they call real winter. So the sun is shining. Yes, Joburg can get a little bit nippy, and our nippy is, you know, 5 degrees Celsius to 14 degrees, and we're complaining. But if you're also fortunate to spend a lot of time in Durban, you know, our very cold winter comes in at about 13 degrees. And so we always just aren't taken seriously.
Yeah, no, but look, I learned the hard way because I wasn't prepared when I moved to Joburg. So I always tell this story of how when the first cold front came, at night I cried. Like, tears were rolling down my cheeks because I had nothing warm. I had to wear like 4 pants, 5 shirts. Anyway, great to have you on the show. So before we get into the topic of the day, and I'm going to reveal what that is, let's start by learning a bit about yourself and your background.
Oh, with pleasure. So I currently work as the clinical lead and the chief operating officer at UNU Health. UNU Health is a health tech platform, which I'm sure we're going to talk quite a lot about. And really, in my role as clinical lead at UNU Health, I am responsible for the co-design and the implementation of clinical protocols to ensure that as a company, we deliver safe and effective healthcare. As COO, I really ensure that our operating model is consistent, it's people-centered, it's performance-driven, and it's collaborative. In terms of my earlier pre-UNU years, I have a history or a background in clinical sports medicine. So very much in the field of sport, elite, professional, high-performance athletes supporting, but also, of course, just exercise for good and exercise and physical activity, lifestyle interventions for health.
Great stuff. And that's something we both share in common, our clinical background. And yes, we are going to be talking about UNU Health. But before we do that, let's paint a bit of a picture for our listeners. Like I said, I used to live in South Africa. And, yeah, you know, coming from West Africa, coming from Nigeria, for me, your healthcare system was like almost heaven. But I see recently that there's been a lot of talk around how the healthcare system is becoming increasingly vulnerable in South Africa. Can you tell us more about that situation?
Absolutely. Dr. Samuel, you'll be aware that non-communicable diseases around the globe are on the rise. Non-communicable diseases or chronic diseases are those diseases of lifestyle. So those cancers, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes are good examples of some of these diseases. And they're on the rise globally, but certainly in Africa and sub-Saharan Africa, we're seeing a disproportionate increase in the burden of these diseases, specifically related to the resources that we have available to us. And this, amongst many other things, is what is really crippling our healthcare system because we cannot meet the demands. So in sub-Saharan Africa, if I just focus on sub-Saharan Africa particularly, we are home to about 11% of the world's population, yet we bear over 24% of the global disease burden. This is also in the context of being home to only 3% of the global health workforce, with the privilege of less than 1% of the world's financial resources on health. And so you can quite obviously see this disproportionate burden that we bear in relation to the resources that we have to manage this. There's a World Health Organization survey that was conducted across 47 countries in Africa. And it very clearly shows that we only have 1.55 health workers, and health workers, you know, bucket in physicians, nurses, and midwives per 1,000 people. And this is very much below the WHO threshold, which is usually 4.45 health workers per 1,000. And that's quantified basically on the number of healthcare workers that are needed to deliver essential healthcare services so that we can achieve universal health coverage. And this has got multiple impacts. Most importantly, it impacts the quality of life of people in Africa because they cannot access the healthcare that they need when they need it. But it also impacts negatively our life expectancy. So our life expectancy in South Africa is 10 years below the life expectancy globally, you know, the global average. And largely this is because of these non-communicable diseases that I've spoken to you about, you know, these cancers, diabetes, chronic heart diseases. And it's in this context, really, that this brewing context that has really gotten us as an organization to stand up on two feet and ask ourselves, what is it that we can do to address this very real problem that affects the quality of life for the people of Africa, and certainly also the prosperity and growth of the African continent?
You had me at non-communicable diseases. That is right up my alley. I spent many years as a public health researcher trying to bring attention to the rising burden of non-communicable diseases in Africa. And I think that there's more investment coming into that space, but I still think a lot of big funders and even governments are just not taking it seriously, right? We have already very fragile healthcare systems, and mostly from communicable diseases, and now add non-communicable diseases that tend to even cost more because of their chronic nature. Oh man, it's a ticking time bomb. Let's drill down even a bit further, because I really want people to get the picture very clear. What are the implications of non-communicable diseases and of the fragile healthcare system in South Africa, or should I say vulnerable healthcare system in South Africa? What are the implications for businesses?
Sure. So if we just talk about the impact from a business perspective, Dr. Samuel, right now at any given time, 15% of South Africa's workforce is on sick leave on any given day. So we know that absenteeism costs the South African economy around 12 to 16 billion rand a year. There's research that estimates that South African businesses are losing as much as 70% of their payroll every single year due to absenteeism. That's 17%, which is very significant in today's economy, right? And so what we know is that reducing absenteeism and presenteeism, and I'll go into presenteeism right now, it does increase productivity. And it certainly has an impact on the bottom line, just given these stats that I've given you. A healthier and happier workforce is a more productive workforce. Presenteeism, which I've just mentioned, is this concept that relates to being present at work, but having a limited capacity or ability to perform your job or aspects of your role because of health problems. And so what that does is it leads to reduced productivity and certainly a below normal work quality. Presenteeism is estimated to cost even more than absenteeism, and as much as 235 billion per year, or differently put, 4.2% of our GDP. So a significant problem, Samuel, when you speak about the business impact, and really big enough or significant that all business owners, corporate South Africa, and government, of course, who employs significant amounts of civil servants, needs to stand up and ask themselves, what can we be doing to contribute to the solving this problem?
Got it. Quite a dire picture that you paint there. But also, on the bright side, it's good that you even have these numbers, because a lot of countries in Africa, they don't have these economic lens or economic perspective in terms of, especially when it comes to non-communicable diseases. And so it's quite impressive that you have those facts at your fingertips and for your context. But of course, these are symptoms of a wider problem, right? So tell us, what are the current issues in South Africa in terms of people being able to get access to affordable and equitable healthcare for all South Africans?
So I think it's important to first understand why the problem has escalated at the rate it has, and then how that translates, as you're asking me, into tangible challenges and friction for the everyday person. So obviously there's a number of factors that have contributed to this increasing prevalence of chronic diseases. There's the fact that we have an increased life expectancy and a larger aging population. So more older people means more likely to develop chronic disease and therefore increasing burden on the system. Urbanization has contributed. Changes in lifestyle. So globalization means that we're eating more unhealthy food, less physically active. What this means essentially is that there's an increased burden of disease on a healthcare system that was already struggling and that is not equipped to tolerate this increased burden. Our healthcare system is struggling because of a lack of resources, and I mentioned one, both in human resources, so this critical source shortage of doctors and nurses, and certainly also limitations in terms of finances, so investments to bulk up the healthcare system. What this translates to for the average person is that, A, there are not enough clinics or hospitals dispersed or distributed around the country so that they are easily accessible to those people who live in non-urban areas, so live in the more rural or outer urban areas. People who live in rural areas typically have to travel quite a fair distance and for a significant amount of time to reach a clinic. When they reach this clinic, the clinics are full. They're working at full capacity because of the decrease or the absence of resources in terms of nurses and doctors. So there's only a finite number of nurses and doctors that is not enough to service the population. And so they will wait in queues. In order to see a doctor or guarantee that you're going to see a nurse, typically speaking, you have to be up and out of your house by 4 o'clock in the morning and be waiting in a line at the clinic by 6 o'clock in the morning for a clinic that only opens at 8:30, you know, and hope that you are going to be close enough to the front of the line that you actually see a doctor. Once you see a doctor or a nurse, a challenge also becomes medication. Many of our clinics, many of our hospitals don't have all of the medication in stock that they need. And so you might wait and see a doctor who prescribes something to you, only to find that actually it's not available at pharmacy, so you need to go home and come back another day, delaying the time with which you need to start your medication and therefore obviously decreasing your optimal output or outcome in terms of that disease progression. If you need to be admitted to hospital, we've got a problem of hospital beds, again, because of capacity and resources. So in this way, what ends up happening is members of the public have lost a little bit of trust or faith in specifically public healthcare systems, which are overburdened. And so often they will delay because of this, I've told you, the challenges really of seeking healthcare. They'll delay going to seek healthcare, which means delayed diagnosis. When they get to the healthcare facility, because of a lack of resources, they might miss the diagnosis initially because of a lack of resources, not because of the knowledge capacity of the doctors or the nurses that work there. I must just make that clear. Or they might diagnose, but now you're diagnosing at a very late stage where you might also encounter not just the initial problem, but also complications of the problem. So if I use diabetes, diabetes can be very well managed if it's diagnosed and detected early and you start managing from a lifestyle perspective, even medication early on. Once you are diagnosing the complications, you might then encounter things like problems with the eyesight. You might encounter vascular problems, in other words, problems with the blood vessels that lead to things like ultimately limb amputations. You might encounter other complications with other systems and organs in your body. And so suddenly, you're not just having to give somebody one dose of medication. You're now having to give multiple types of medication and also consider hospitalization. These are the tangible, and this is the impact really of this resource constraints and this overburdened system.
But this is a problem that a lot of countries in Africa are facing. And I think innovation is one of the ways that we can overcome some of these challenges. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of how UNU Health is innovating, why is innovation in health important, particularly now in the context of South Africa? And what role do you think business should play in health innovation?
Oh, I love where this conversation is going, because it's one thing to talk about problems, Samuel, and we can talk about problems all day. But you know what really gets my blood boiling in the right way is talking about how do we solve for those problems. And that's exactly what you're asking me now. Innovation absolutely can help remove the friction in access to quality and affordable healthcare. What we know about tech innovation specifically is that it does things like enable remote access to medical services. So this is telemedicine and telehealth. It can improve the ways in which professionals can gather and analyze information. So electronic health records, even just these AI tools that are available to source information about symptoms and manage day-to-day symptoms. It can improve communication between patients and healthcare providers. And this is foundational and fundamental. What we also know is that technology can help reduce the burden on the healthcare system. And I've spoken a lot about the burden and why there's an increased burden on the healthcare system. So right now, there are AI-powered and video-based solutions that enable anyone to measure a wide range of biomarkers just using your smartphone or a tablet or a laptop. So there's digital nurses such as, you know, Abby, which is one that we use when we're doing screens for large groups of people. And this electronic nurse can do a health check within 3 minutes and give you feedback on 17 key biomarkers. Patients are even now able to take a selfie, Dr. Samuel. They take a selfie on their phone, and through the selfie and through the technology that's embedded in it, you can receive an assessment across a wide range of biomarkers. So look at things like your blood pressure, your vascular health, They can look at your oxygen saturation. So, you know, your oxygen saturation within your blood, how well you're breathing essentially and ventilating. So it's in these ways that telemedicine specifically and technology and innovation in technology can be specifically useful in rural and underserviced areas, or in service in areas where really we need to reduce the burden or improve efficiency so that the nurses and doctors can function more efficiently and effectively. So now, again, going back to the example of what does this translate to every day for the person on the street, is instead of waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and having to go and stand in a long line, through innovation and tech and something like digital medicine or telehealth, you can now get help through your smartphone from home at 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, depending on the service that you are accessing. You can see a doctor, consult with the doctor or nurse through your phone without having to stand in that queue. The doctor or the nurse can prescribe medication, which you can then get on your phone and then go to a pharmacy. So instead of an exercise taking you from 4 o'clock in the morning to maybe leaving the clinic at 2 o'clock, hopefully with medication if you're lucky, you can start a process at 8 o'clock in the morning, go to your pharmacy by 8, 9 o'clock after you've consulted with the doctor, and be back at home or at work by 9, 10. Maybe not even interrupt your day. Go to the pharmacy after your working day. And so for many Africans and South Africans, when you go to the clinic or you miss a day of work, that's no pay, right? And so what's allowing now is for you to continue work, your earnings, and still receive treatment. To answer the second part of your question then, in terms of, you know, what role can businesses play in health innovation? I've mentioned and I've alluded to before, but the stats have very clearly demonstrated that a happier, healthier workforce is also a more productive workforce. So from a business perspective, in addition to it just being the right thing to do to enable your workforce access to quality primary health care, there's also a commercial imperative, right? So it'll also affect the bottom line. So businesses can play an important role by ensuring, firstly, that the employees do have access to quality, affordable health care. One can, as a business, consider offering healthcare plans that extend to dependents. So not only the employees, but dependents, because we do know that, especially in the African context, community is everything, right? And so you can't divorce an employee or a person from their family, you know, and so that's very, very important. 41% of households have more than four people in a household. So it's really important to also consider this. And then as a business, of course, what you can also consider is, other than investing in your own employees, perhaps even their families, how can you invest or co-invest in solutions that improve access to care? It really is my firm belief, and certainly Una Health's firm belief, that as corporate South Africa, as businesses, we need to be the change that we want to see and be part of the solution.
Got it. I really like that last point you made about being part of the solution. So let's switch gears then and hear about Unu Health. What is Unu Health and what problem are you solving for?
Unu Health is a healthcare platform that essentially connects people to the healthcare that they need in order to live happier, healthier lives. It's a two-sided platform with users on one side. So currently these are employees and employers, and then our partners or the healthcare providers on the other side. And what our role is as a platform is that we curate and we orchestrate patient-centric healthcare solutions. We remove the friction and we provide access to essentially affordable primary healthcare, including nurse consults, doctor consults, medication, blood tests, and radiology. That's what we do.
Got it. That's very clear. So tell us about the history. So how did Unu Health develop?
It was very much driven by the realities that access to quality, affordable healthcare is inequitable across sub-Saharan Africa, and it's lacking in terms of servicing the needs of the people. We also understood the vast social and economic impact of this reality, and then we're forced to take a stand to address this essentially. Our goal, very fundamentally, is to democratize healthcare and so improve access to quality healthcare, which we know has a microeconomic and macroeconomic impact.
Got it. And I mean, that's a goal that we share on this podcast, right? All about how tech can democratize access to healthcare. So let's talk about your reach in terms of what kind of milestones have you achieved in your journey with Unu Health so far?
We launched Unu Health last year in August 2022. And it was very much a soft launch, launched only to a very small cohort of businesses. Our approach very much has been B2B. So we've been approaching businesses to take on our solution, essentially for the benefit of the employees. And our style of launching was very deliberate in the sense that our product, even as we launched, was very much market-driven. We'd done a considerable amount of market research to understand the needs of the market that's currently underserved. and also how to shape this proposition and this prospect so that it actually is accessible and it serves the actual acquired purpose, which is connecting people to the healthcare they need and decreasing barriers to access of care. We've received a great response from business. There's not a single business head or business entity that we've spoken to, and I'm talking across thousands, right, who have said to us, this is a terrible idea. What we've had to pivot and understand as we have learned and gotten insights and been informed by them is affordability still remains an issue, even in business, right? And so how do we innovate essentially around our model to ensure that businesses are able to take on this responsibility or share this responsibility with their employees in order to deliver the service? What that's translated to in terms of milestones is when we launched in August, we essentially launched with three products that were fully employer funded. It was always in our pipeline and in our roadmap to deliver co-funded solutions and insured solutions. But we just brought that forward, given the response of business to the product saying, we love it, but right now the economy is not doing us any favors, so we can't fully fund all the time. And we've been able to launch additional two products that are insured and co-funded in by the employees in March this year. There's been a great uptake in response to that. What we've also been able to do is just make slight tweaks to our platform. Our platform is specifically built as a PWA, so a web application, so that we can be agile in how we make improvements and constant enhancements informed again by our users. And some of these improvements really have just been to clarify certain things about understanding so that people are very quick to get to the service, the product that they need essentially on the platform, and that it speaks to them in a language basically that they understand. What we do know is that the sales cycle for something like this is very long. So in terms of reaching our targets, we have a lot of work to do, but the response right now from business, from the community, from the market has been extremely encouraging. And we are quite confident that being a disruptor is never easy, but that we will achieve what we're trying to achieve. We know that there's actually market confirmation. So there's category confirmation because there's more recently as the last week, we learned of more players entering this particular market, this middle market that has until very recently not been served at all. And that gives us confidence. It gives us confidence when other people are joining because it says, yes, there's a need. Yes, we're addressing the right market and there's lots of work to be done. And of course, we invite more people to do it.
You know, almost a lot of the startups that I've spoken to, a lot of the digital health startups that I've spoken to recently, they're also sort of coming to the same conclusions that you are coming to, that it seems that for traction, the more, I wouldn't say easier, but the better approach is to go for B2B versus B2C, right? And I'm finding that very interesting because a lot of the digital health startups that I've encountered actually started with a B2C intent, right? And then they had to pivot to B2B. So maybe give us some reflections. Why do you think that the B2C approach is not yet mature or ripe yet for digital health on the continent?
So Dr. Samuel, let me be clear. We certainly plan to use all distribution channels, including B2C. But we realized very early that a B2B might be better suited for our proposition for a number of reasons. Firstly, we are seed funded by Standard Bank. And although we sort of function very independently, what we also recognized is that there was an ability and there was an opportunity essentially for us to work alongside Standard Bank who's supporting us and leverage their platforms and their networks, most of which are B2B, right? What we also know is just if we consider the economy and we are as an economy, you know, we're essentially entering into a recession. We have entered into a recession. And so usually the first people who feel the effects of a recession are the person on the street, the man and woman on the street. You feel it in your pockets by the increasing prices of gas and fuel, by the increase in the, you know, goods, grocery goods. And so you feel it and it becomes more difficult for you to spend, especially what you might think of as a voluntary, perhaps not necessary spend or not vital spend. Something like health and medical insurance, we know is on the decrease, in fact, when it comes to how much people are spending on it voluntarily, of course. From a B2B perspective, businesses are definitely also feeling the pinch, but they do have a little bit more capacity with which to essentially respond to such a crisis. Furthermore, as I mentioned earlier, we know that this is not just a social imperative. Businesses shouldn't just be doing this because it's the right thing or the nice thing to do for the employees. There's actually a commercial imperative. And so oftentimes in times of crisis, you do need to invest some way in order to protect your business and to make your business more robust and then grow your business through the crisis. And in those businesses that are very people dependent, as many are, your people need to be one of the first places that you invest in. And we see many businesses responding and receptive to this as well, just asking us to help them realize this within the confines of their budget.
Very, very important insights there, because at the end of the day, look, businesses can't function without people, right? So really happy that you're able to make this strong business case to employers, and that your services now are gaining quite a bit of traction. So let's dream. Let's look into the crystal ball of the future, right? What are your plans as Unu Health in terms of scaling up your services over the next couple of years?
As I mentioned to you, Dr. Samuel, ours is a health platform which is two-sided. So we've got the users and the member on the one side, and obviously our dream there is to grow our member base and our user base. So as I mentioned, while our distribution strategy right now has begun as a B2B distribution strategy, we are soon going to launch our retail proposition, which is very much a B2C proposition. Because again, the employer or the individual shouldn't just have to rely on the employer to bring the solution. We feel that they can take ownership themselves, and we're going to make it affordable. So that's the one side. Our job as a platform is to curate service providers as well. And that's the second side of the platform, these healthcare providers. Right now, as we stand, we have got 5 plans that you can access through the platform. And our plan is to grow that. So grow our partners and grow the healthcare providers and services that you can tap into on our plan. And so we don't just want to be able to offer primary healthcare plans. We are gearing up to launch very soon a retail proposition that will allow you access, for instance, to a doctor-informed and AI-driven platform that can help you do a symptom check, that can pay-as-you-go services, being able to access doctor pay-as-you-go online, reproductive healthcare services on the platform, and you name it. Quite literally, anything healthcare-related, being able to access that through our Unu Health platform. That's where we're going. Also, really importantly, while we've launched in South Africa, our dream and our ambition is very much to extend throughout the rest of Africa, because as you and I have both reiterated throughout this conversation, this is not a South Africa problem. This is an Africa-wide problem, or rather, this is an Africa-wide opportunity. We experience the similar types of challenges in terms of access to resources, in terms of friction accessing healthcare. And so the opportunity for us to provide the solution throughout Africa is one that we would definitely want to capitalize on as a Pan-African organization.
Well, very well said. And that sounds like a dream that is very much achievable. So let's end on this note, right? I've said this so many times on the podcast that one of my goals was to ensure that I amplify the voices of women in digital health and women in health tech. So what words of wisdom or encouragement might you have for any aspiring women in digital health who might be listening to the show?
We have the privilege of being involved in healthcare at such a compelling and an important time in the history of healthcare, important because of the crisis which we face globally, and compelling because of the opportunities that are presented through health tech innovation. And so while I know first health that being a woman in health tech can be challenging, you're often met with lots of barriers, with resistance, you feel like you're knocking your head on a glass ceiling. What I also know is the why is important enough to keep us knocking against that glass ceiling, because we will break through. And when we break through, we won't be breaking through alone. We'll be taking others with us. And with that in mind, you know, that's what gets me up every single day in the morning. That's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me pushing back and not fighting against, but fighting for what I know needs to be done in order to realize Africa's full potential.
Very well said. Very well said. And let's keep shattering those glass ceilings. Well, on that very inspirational note, just want to say thank you so much, Dr. Sondi, for being on the podcast. I don't know if you have plans for being in Nairobi anytime soon, but if you are, or if you do, please look me up.
I will take you up on that. Thank you for having me, Dr. Samuel. It's been great to chat to you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. MedTech Africa is produced and hosted by Sam Oti and co-edited by yours truly, Veronica Sander Ojambo. The goal of MedTech Africa is to provide a platform for showcasing digital health and health tech innovations across the African continent. Please reach out to us if you have any thoughts on this episode or recommendations of African health innovators that you'd like us to host on the show. You can find our contact details in the episode show notes. Finally, be sure to subscribe to MedTech Africa on your preferred podcast platform. And if you have a moment, please leave us a great review because it really helps other people to find the show. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you join us in our next episode.